Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we are excited to have with us international best-selling author Ava Miles. Ava calls herself a divine rock star, something that she believes everyone is deep down. With a Bachelor of Arts in Rhetoric and Technical Writing and Spanish, as well as two graduate degrees, one in International Peace Studies and another in Political Science, Ava has spent many years traveling the world and sharing her gifts with women and men in war-torn countries, helping them to rebuild and reintegrate their communities amidst intense struggle. She has managed multi-million dollar projects and multinational teams of people in the private sector, in nonprofits, and in domestic and international agencies, as well as multilateral organizations such as the United Nations. Now she brings that experience together with her passion for sparking joy and personal success in people's lives, launching an all-new and life fulfillment book called The Goddess Guides to Being a Woman. The Goddess Guides invites us all to reimagine what it means to be a modern woman on our own terms. Join Ava in letting the brilliance of your true goddess nature shine, and that for all women and girls in your life, allow their greatness to shine as well. For more information, you can go to avamiles.com, and we'll repeat that website for you later today as well. So thank you so much for joining us today, Ava. So many wonderful accomplishments.
Oh, it's so exciting to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Jennifer.
Yeah, I can't believe it. So for our listeners who missed our little pre-conversation we were having as we were about to go live, if I heard you correctly, did you say that you've published over 40 books, including fiction and nonfiction? Is that correct?
That's right. When I decided to go as an author, I went all in. I'm like the poker player at the World Series.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty darn impressive. So tell our listeners a little bit about how you became an author. Was that always your dream when you were a little girl?
Yeah, it was always my dream. I was from a small town in the Midwest originally, from the daughter of like a teacher and a nurse. And, you know, in the small town I grew up in, people didn't talk about becoming authors. You got like a serious job. You went to school, like you went to college, you got like this job, and you pretty much stayed in that job. You took care of your family. But I'd loved to write since I was a kid, and I was really like good at it. I was always told my stories were pretty imaginative. I was just telling one of my best friend, sometimes I was told I was too imaginative, and I was like, when do you tell a kid that, right?
No such thing.
Yeah, but I was just told, you know, like it never even dawned on me when I was growing up that you could become a writer, because like as a profession, you know, like you just wrote. And so I wrote for myself for a while. And then I was working, as you heard in the bio, I was working rebuilding war zones overseas. And I was in Sierra Leone, actually. And if you've ever seen Blood Diamonds, it's kind of like that. And I had these former child soldiers outside of my hotel room. And I was the only woman, actually the only person in this small hotel in Freetown, which was really scary. And they were playing rap music, and they were burning things in like leftover garbage cans outside of my room. And I thought they were going to overrun my room and do all sorts of things to me, which we don't need to talk about. But I was writing my first book, and I was like, it was the only thing that was making me happy. And I was like, I need to write myself a new story. And so as I wrote that book, I finally was like, I need to give this a go. And so I gave it to some trusted people, and they really thought it was phenomenal. And then, you know, it all kind of worked out. And, you know, my first book ended up hitting like the bestseller list. And I'm telling you, it's been the greatest blessing. I mean, you know, everybody in like a lot of people, I should say not everybody, but a lot of people go to LA to like live their dream job. And I'm living my dream job. And I did this, I left my old career at 39. So I'm just going to tell all you people, like whoever, whatever your ages are, you like, don't let anybody tell you you're too old or too young. Like, you can always decide today is going to be the day you change your life and something miraculous can happen to you. I'm living proof of it. And that's why I like share my story.
Oh my gosh, I just got chills. So you left. What was your career before you became an author? What were you doing at that point?
So that was I was rebuilding war zones. So
That was actually work. Got it. Oh my gosh. I didn't know if you were just a philanthropist out there helping the world, but you were actually out there doing that.
I was working with various agencies and, you know, obviously with the U.S. government. I was working, I worked for different NGOs, for example, and groups that worked outside of Washington, D.C. And so that's why I worked in that for 15 years. You know, and to anybody who, you know, knows anything about Washington, you know, I had tremendous abilities to travel to the world to affect change. I was making six figures, which in Washington, it's not a wealthy town. I don't know if a lot of people understand that, but like there, it's just not a town that's based on that level of wealth. I mean, the lobbyists have it, but in government, it's a little bit different. So to make six figures as a young woman, it was a big deal. And I, like I said, I was sort of at the forefront of my career, but I just, while I loved it, while it was very rewarding at times, it didn't give me the kind of joy that writing did. And a lot of times it really broke my heart. I mean, you know, going and being in post like genocide, Rwanda was one of the most difficult times of my life, seeing what, you know, people can do to each other and just how do you come back from that? How do you rebuild from that? So literally, like when I talk about, you know, like having like a fully fledged career, when I told people I was going to like quit it and go and give everything that I had to becoming a published author and like literally running with that, they thought it was so brave and that was so great, but they also thought I was a little crazy.
That's entirely possible. My gosh, I could see that. Did you have any doubts in your own mind of how could I do this or can I do this?
Oh, God, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, you have the I always say you have the mountaintop moments, right, where you know that you're in complete alignment with what you're supposed to be doing. You know, you know your book is phenomenal or, you know, say if you're an actor, for example, because I have a feeling you probably have some actors that listen, you know that you're perfect for this role. But then you go and have those other moments where you're just like, oh, my God, like, how am I going to pay my rent or how am I going to, how is this all going to come together? You know, and I remember telling one of my sisters, because it took a little bit of time to get my books, for you know, with traction. It took me 6 months to hit the bestseller list, which some of my author friends are like, my God, it still is only 6 months. They're like, do you know how rare that is? But for those 6 months, like I told one of my sisters, I was like, I might have to get a job at Starbucks for my health insurance. I was like, you know, I think this is, and she's like, I just don't see a barista in your future. She's like, I think it's going to be okay. But I mean, in that moment, I just wasn't sure. And she goes, plus I'm not sure you could make really good coffee. So she's like, keep with the writing, you know? And so, like I said, I just kept, I mean, I had saved, you know, I mean, you know, if we want to talk about getting a job and like, you know, for me pursuing a career, like I had a plan and I was very specific about it. I had a certain amount that I knew needed to be in my bank account before I could quit. I needed to have like these other sort of pieces. You know, I was telling Jennifer, for all you listeners right before, that I also held back some books that I had written because I knew that I needed a platform. You need readers to be able to buy your next book. And so I didn't just release like one book and then wait for, you know, like a year to release the next one. I released five books, 6 weeks apart. And let me tell you, I worked my tail off. So all of you who are going to auditions and waitressing and all that, not to be specific on the actor stuff, but I just feel like I need to be right now. Like, you know what I'm talking about. And I was working like 20-hour days, but you know, I was working for my dream. I wasn't working for the man or the boss or whatever you want to call it. And that made all the difference. And like I said, it's paid off just so beautifully because it's from like my greatest self.
I love that. It's such an inspirational story. I love that we brought you on the show to talk about sexual harassment. And here we are talking about releasing your inner goddess and how to live your life and be fulfilled. But it's perfect because, you know, there are going to be highs and lows in life. And unfortunately, with all the sexual harassment stuff coming out right now, and that has been coming out over the last 6 months or so, you know, there have been a lot of lows for a lot of people, but on the upside of those lows are people who are able to finally be self-expressed, finally get things out of their way, and to live their true dream without feeling like they're going to be stepped on or their careers will be crushed. And I think it's such a fine line that women have to walk, even right now with the sexual harassment thing going on. It's this balancing act because, you know, I had a friend of mine who is the CEO of a company and we were grabbing breakfast one day and I hug people. I'm a hugger. I'm like, oh, wait, can we hug? Can we not hug? He's like, we're in public. I think we're allowed to hug, you know, but we've gone so far on the other side of the pendulum. So let's talk for a minute about how you, you know, as this amazing author, but before all of that, were a woman making six figures in DC, were you ever put in awkward positions? And if so, how did you handle that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I talk a lot about it in the Goddess Guides because one of the things that was a main piece, there are nine books, and one of the books is called Goddesses Deserve the G's, but it's talking about how We as women aren't really taught to feel worth for ourselves in terms of how we feel about money, you know, and like it gets to kind of your point about the things that women are experiencing now with the Me Too and the Time's Up piece is that also they're being asked, and it's not just women because, you know, there are other people. Kevin Spacey comes to mind. I'd read an article about him yesterday. So it's men too. But being asked to trade on your dreams for sex. And one of the things that I noted in Goddesses Deserve the G is so sad to me that the oldest story about women making money is about prostitution. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever says it's about women baking bread or women making herbs for some wounded person. It's about sex. Because I'm like, you know, they probably were making bread. They probably had herbs. But that's the story that gets passed down. And I was like, that's to our detriment. And that's kind of what this little thread is, or big thread is, that's going on right now, is that women are still being asked, or men too, to trade on their dreams for sex. And sometimes it's a function of the person, because, you know, we can talk about predators all day. They just don't seem to realize their behavior is inappropriate. Some of it to me is they're not being held accountable, and so they're just going to keep running with it. You know, like from where I'm from, it's like, you know, you give somebody an inch, they're going to go a mile. Apparently, some of these people went like more than a mile, and they overstepped all bounds of professionalism and propriety, even in the midst of people knowing who knew better and who didn't call them on it. But for me, you know, I experienced both in Washington, you know, which is a town of legendary sex scandals, let's face it. I mean, I'll call it out there. You know, I mean, like, you know, it's not just interns, right? It's not just Lewinsky stuff. It's been other things. It's been other women who felt like they didn't have a choice. And it's also been, you know, people who just feel like they're so powerful that they're going to put you in difficult positions, or they're going to ask you things. I tell this great story about, it was one of my first encounters with it. I went and was working with an older senior manager, and I was, oh gosh, I probably was like 26, 25, 26. It was like my big first premier job. You know, I finally had landed like the job, right, in Washington that everybody wanted to work with. And I was going to go along to this particular restaurant, which I couldn't afford on my salary back then, which all the senators went to. It was like a big deal. And I used to be a chef, right, like in my college years. So I was so excited to actually be going because it was the first time I got to go. And we were going to go visit some oil company representatives because we were doing some community mobilization activities in places like Angola, for example, and other, like Colombia and other oil sort of rich companies that were trying to do more things with their communities. So I get this email from him a couple days before the lunch, and I was checking in, and he said, well, you can come to our lunch if you wear that black dress that you wore on your birthday.
Oh, no.
And I had this moment because it was like my birthday had been like 7 months before, and I'm like, what the hell, right? Like, what the hell? So I had to think about it, and I was like, oh, my God, he means that, like, sleeveless Ann Taylor, which, you know, Ann Taylor to me is really conservative. It's very DC. It was this black sleeveless Ann Taylor dress. That to me wasn't like sexy, right? But apparently to him, it made an impression. And so I went into my deputy, who is a male, and I showed him the email, and he's like, oh my God. And he's like, I hate to say it, I remember the dress. He's like, sometimes you just don't know how sexy you are. And I was just like, but this is not, shouldn't be a deal. He's like, it shouldn't be a deal. And then he's like, how are you going to handle it? So, you know, here I am, a young person, a young woman, also in my career. I don't want to screw this up. He had a lot more power than I did. And I was like, going to HR didn't feel like the right thing. It just didn't feel like the right thing. I didn't know the company well enough to know what the politics were and how to navigate that. Also, I was new, and I was like, I'm an easy person to pluck out. And these are terrible calculations you have to make. So what I decided to do, which I've fallen back on many times in my life, is humor, but with a veiled sort of warning. And so I wrote him back, and I was like, ha, ha, ha. I was like, that black dress, ? I was like, you know, I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I was like, and honestly, I was like, if I wasn't some small town girl from the Midwest, this would be one of those emails that I'd forward on to HR because I just don't know what to make of it.
Oh, my like, gosh. That's amazing, but, though, that you called him out on
but
it.
I said, but I'll see you on Friday, and, you know, I'll probably wear what I end up wanting to wear. And then I just signed it, and you know what? I went to lunch. It was fine. I shined. I sparkled. He never, ever, ever stepped out of line with me again. And so that's a good thing about how you can sometimes use humor to do it. I have another situation, though, when I was in Jordan, with my boss, who was a lovely, lovely man. I mean, he's one of the last gentlemen in Washington, let me tell you. I was so lucky to have worked for him. And I'm still in touch with him today. And he, like, actually read The Goddesses Deserve the G's because I dedicated, he was one of the people that I dedicated it to, in addition to Joan Kroc, who funded my scholarship to Notre Dame, who was the first really wealthy woman that I saw who brought integrity and beauty to life, because she gave so much to so many people, and she did it from such a happy place. So anyway, we were in Jordan, and this very, very senior Jordanian man with a lot of power, I won't say sort of what he was associated with, but he was a mover and a shaker. We go out, and he's very captivating. I mean, like revolutionary sort of types in some respects, and people that are in those environments sometimes are very captivating. And I was really aware of how powerful he was. And so a couple days later, he calls me at the hotel, and he asks if he wants to invite me up to his villa in this basically like seaside in Jordan. And I was like, oh, this is really odd. He doesn't mention my two colleagues, my boss or my my assistant. And he doesn't mention his wife. And I'm like,
oh no,
this isn't good. So I was like, you know, I don't know how to handle this. I mean, like, I was working in the Middle East specifically, but I didn't feel like I had enough cultural understanding of Jordan to how to not screw this up, because I was like, I know he was important to our project, but I also was not going to go up there because I'm not going to put myself in that vulnerable of a situation. I knew what he was after.
Yeah.
There's no doubt what he was after. So I called my boss. I still remember it. It was early in the morning. And I said, look, because it was funny. I don't remember if he was leaving or if I called him because I couldn't face him in person because I felt so embarrassed and awkward about it. So I think I might've called him because I didn't want to be in person with him.
Yeah.
So I start explaining the situation, and I'm like, and finally he goes, oh, he's like, I get it. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, oh, he's like, I'm sorry that I was so like lame. I didn't get it for a minute, but he's like, I got it. And then he stopped, and I could hear him because he usually was a good thinker. And he said, this is what you do. He's like, you call back and you say, his name and my assistant's name. We would all be happy to go to his villa for the weekend and meet his wife. And I was like, genius. That's what I did. There was this long pause. And he says, you know, oh, that's wonderful. He's like, I'll get back to you. And he never got back to me. But you know what? He didn't screw it up, because I told my boss, I don't want to mess this deal up for us because I know how important it is. And I don't want to make it be awkward, but I don't know how to handle this myself. So for me, you know, it's a good representative of the fact that there are also really good men out there who can help you in those moments. You know, we haven't had a lot of those fabulous stories, at least that I've heard, in which we've got men who actually are good advisors. I mean, I know I was so delighted to hear that Brad Pitt had, like, talked to Weinstein and basically told him to, like, stop pounding Gwyneth Paltrow. I mean, like, that's a great story about a man standing up for somebody. And we don't always need somebody to stand up for us because we can stand up. But you know what? Like, sometimes maybe that's the right thing to do. And, like, we should just be okay with it. I mean, sometimes we as women, we get a little bit too tough ourselves. And, like, there's a good resource maybe that's available to us in which we don't have to put ourselves, like, out quite as much. And we can have somebody support us, because that's also a beautiful thing, too.
Yeah, it's a really good point you raise. I mean, it's, as women, we want to be able to own our own power. But something that is great for both men and women to understand is one of the greatest ways to be powerful as a human being is to be willing to ask for help. Because I think that if we go inside our little cocoon and we're afraid or we're worried that we'll look bad if we ask for somebody's advice on it, then we're really giving our power away, because then we're letting that other person, male or female, no matter what the circumstances are, get the better of you. And I think that both of the examples that you gave were great, because they were, in some ways, now the humor thing, being a recruiter and very familiar with all the HR and legalities around that, it could just as easily blow up. And like you said, when you were a very young woman, you could have been let go like that because you were disposed comparatively to maybe people who had been there a longer time, not just because you're a woman, but at the same time, you were able to diffuse the situation via humor. And what I'm hearing you say about the second situation as well, it's kind of similar to bullying. Is so one, we've had experts on the show about bullying as well, which also ties into harassment of a non-sexual nature, but just being harassed, is calling somebody out on it. The moment you call somebody out on what they're doing, which I think is what you did do in your first email, that can often be like, wow, either that person didn't know, and they might go, oh my gosh, was that actually how that email came across? Or they do know and they're being called out on being a bully or predator, And then they get to really evaluate whether or not that's something that they want to proceed with and face the consequences of. So, in fact, you were saying about men and how great it is, Brad Pitt, and how he stood up. I think that's brilliant. And one thing with all the Me Too stuff that was happening, you know, whenever it was on Facebook, there was a male friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, who posted on Facebook, and it wasn't Me Too. I want to say that he sat hashtag I am, like he was one of the people who had harassed women. And I wish I could find it right now because it was this beautiful post where he just owned up. He's like, as the father of two daughters and the husband of a beautiful wife, he said, I am the man who has disempowered women. I am the man who maybe made inappropriate jokes. I am sorry for all the people that I may have caused, you know, inadvertently harm to. And I just remember tearing up when I read it because he's one of those guys who's very funny and outgoing and always making off-color jokes. But the minute he saw himself in some of these men or women who were coming forward, he was able to acknowledge and to post about it, which was a very courageous thing in my books to do right when all that was happening.
Absolutely.
And I just remember being so touched by that, by his willingness to be vulnerable and lay it all out on the table and to say, you know what, I've been that guy and I'm not going to be that guy going forward.
Well, that's right, because the only way we can break any victim-perpetrator cycle is to take responsibility, and it doesn't matter which part of the cycle we've, like, been involved in. We have to go and own up to our own part, and so I think that's so beautiful that he did that. You know, I've had a couple other people who've, you know, noted that they've stepped in one occasion, but they stepped in because they knew the woman, and they didn't know if they actually would step in for all women, and I was like, but you don't know that. I was like, you have already done a very important piece. And I was like, it's building blocks because it does take courage, and courage, you know, for a lot of us is a building experience. I mean, I know that, you know, like I was going to war zones and progressively worse war zones. And like, it took me a lot of courage, but it was a building thing because there's acclimation to being courageous as well. And it's not something we talk about a lot. There's momentary sort of pieces in which, you know, it's the right thing to do and you step in, but there's also the ones in which, you know, it's coming and you know, it's happening and you dread the crap out of it. You know, I mean, a lot of people can sort of like understand sort of that piece too. And it's like, you know that you need to stand up, or you know that something like is coming at you and you need to stand in the face of it. And like, there can be a lot of dread and a lot of like fear. And I, you know, one of my books is Goddesses Face Fear, because it's like, it's so important to talk about how do we tap into that true inner courage that we all have. And something that really serves all of us. And it doesn't matter if it's an emotional threat or a physical sort of piece. We have so many fears that are keeping us back. And I feel like for, you know, a lot of women in the harassment situation, you know, myself at certain times included, because those are the only, like, I have other ones, but those were the two main ones that I wanted to share today. The piece that we sort of need to do is we need to continue to believe that we're going to be able to succeed, because there's going to be other times where we're going to come across men like that and you're going to think, oh, crap, I hope he's not going to try to F this up for me. I hope he's not going to make that move, because I'm going to have to go and handle this again, and I'm not sure how that's going to go down, because you might be wanting to handle it differently that time. Or it might be progressively worse because you know you're with a worse person, you know, and like he's more dangerous, he's more predatory. I mean, God knows I've dealt with that. And it's like, okay, you know, like we're going to have to handle this a little bit in a different way. But I think that's the beauty of it, is that, you know, and I think the thing about bringing in support, to your point, is that we also have to recognize, I used to say this all the time, like we have to recognize sometimes that sometimes the best way to solve the problem is to solve the problem the best way, as opposed to trying to take it on all of ourselves, you know? And that's something that I've had to learn, not just as a woman, but as a person, that, you know, I need to look for the best way to solve it and not necessarily think that I'm the one that is completely the needs to be the lead. There was this time, for example, and I remember it very starkly, and I remembered it when people were saying, like, how do I help? And I don't always know how to help. I was at a state fair, and this fight broke out between these two men, and it was really scary. It was violent. They were like hurting each other, and I knew I couldn't go and stop that fight, but I also knew that I had looked and I knew where the cop was, and I ran to the cop and I got him, and that's where he came back, because he was in a better position to solve that problem than I was, but I knew how I could contribute. And I think that's the thing, is like, when we're directly involved, we have to handle it, yes, but there might be other ways, other resources, like a boss or a boyfriend or a colleague who is in a better place, because sometimes we might not be protected. predators don't look at women and think like, oh, wow, she's so tough. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to like take that. I mean, of course they're going to say that because otherwise they wouldn't step in with that. And they don't do it to all women, right? They do it to the ones that they think are more vulnerable, or they do it in spaces where they feel like the person's going to be more vulnerable. And I think that's important for, you know, all of us to remember. But we have to look at the situation. That's why I would say there's no cookie cutter approaches to how you handle this. I'm never going to tell a woman in a company that if she's being harassed, she has to go to HR. Because I know that some HR people are not going to be acting in her interest. Sometimes they're acting on the company's interest and they're CYA. And you have to like be aware of what's going on. Sometimes you might just decide that the best thing that you can do is hope that that person's going to get their just comeuppance at another time and you leave and get a different job. And that is something that we all should be willing to accept because that's essentially that person's choice and we all should respect that. So I'm not going to tell anybody that they need to act a certain way, but I do believe anybody who's in that position who's doing certain stuff, there is justice and they will be held accountable. And the more that we can stand for that, especially as a community, as a with companies. One of the things I was really surprised, I was, like I said, I read about this article Gabriel Byrne had posted in the Huffington Post about the experience he had filming Usual Suspects with Kevin Spacey. And he said something that I don't think probably was known at the time of the filming is they closed down production on that film for 2 days because of Kevin Spacey's actions. And wow. I thought, isn't that interesting? Because somebody on that production crew and that company, right, they decided that they were going to handle it that way. And I was like, And I didn't quite know how I felt about it, but I was just like, this is really interesting that it goes back that far. But that's the thing is it's not, sometimes it's person to person, but when you're in a work situation, which ultimately is the legal definition of sexual harassment, then because assault's sort of outside the parameters of that in some respects, although it can be like co-joined. You have other people and you have other laws and you have other rights and conventions that are like governing that. And I just thought that was so interesting that that's what Gabriel Byrne said. And I was just like, how might that have been handled differently or how did they not handle it in a way that left a lasting impression? You know what I mean? And I thought that was really interesting.
Well, I hear what you're saying. And something funny that I want to go back and touch on for a moment is I appreciate and respect that everybody has a choice in how they want to handle it. And, you know, being confrontational or addressing the situation directly could compromise your career. But I'll give you a counterexample where probably 40 women's lives were impacted. And this wasn't sexual. It was more harassment oriented. There was a story that was recently relayed to me for about somebody who was in HR and it was an entertainment related company. And this person came forward 2 or 3 years later, because at the time, similar situation to what you said, you know, she didn't want to jeopardize her career. She didn't think it was too big of a deal. And it turned out that this one particular predator would, you know, give a hard time to the people in this production situation and harass them regularly, after hours calls, all sorts of things, inappropriate remarks. But then come to find out, here you are 3, 4, 5 years later, and 40 other people have been victimized by this person. So as much as I do agree that, yes, to some extent, we always want to have choice and know that we have a choice and not feel like we're up against a wall, I would encourage anybody out there listening who's maybe been in this position, male or female, to consider and weigh all the pros and cons that you might be helping to prevent somebody else to go through the same hardship that you went through. And yes, you might lose your job over it. And yes, there might be ramifications to your actions. But look at the Me Too movement and what's happened for so many people out there who no longer have to hide or be shamed about it. You know, there was a great YouTube talk I was listening to, I'm drawing a blank on her name, about shame and women specifically, how we deal with shame differently than the way men deal with shame. And I think that there's so much shame around the harassment thing, be it male or female, sexual or just general harassment, that we feel guilty about it. But we have to keep in mind, if somebody doesn't stand up to that bully or that harasser, you know, sexual or otherwise, that person will go on and find more and more victims until somebody is in a position to stop them or until hopefully they get the help they need to prevent that from happening again. I don't know. I just wanted to touch on that.
No, it's really important, and I totally feel that, because those are decisions that I weighed as well when I, you know, decided I wasn't going, when I didn't feel like HR had my back in a couple of circumstances. But I think the one thing, and it's one thing that I talk about, I've written about it in a couple articles, one of the really nice things now, and I'm going to say it because it's important, is one of the big problems that women have had, and I remember myself historically, is that it was a he said, she said situation.
Mm.
And so when you walked into that sort of place, you didn't have the kind of evidence that you'd have, say, in a murder trial, in a manslaughter trial, for example. One thing, though, now, which technology really helps us, and I've been encouraging women in like articles and a number of other appearances that I've had, is our iPhones, our phones are so accessible. So when you know someone is walking down the hallway to you, you turn your phone on and mm-hmm. you get them on record. So that's the thing, is that it's important to stand up, but you need to stand up. I just had a friend who had to stand up in a court of law last week, actually, and I've been seeing what she's had to go through. It is important that you have evidence. And so that's the thing, is that you want to make sure that you have – I had an email, for example, and that was like good evidence, right? They don't always – the crafty ones aren't going to go and have that. They don't have this sort of string of stuff quite that same way. Or you have, but I think there are ways in which to get evidence now that I think I've been encouraging women to think about, because you have to sort of plan around it, you know, because just going in with a he said, she said situation without other women standing up with you sometimes, it is easy for them to punch holes at you, you know, and then they get into, then they'll start throwing things at you like, you know, well, look at the way you dress. I heard people say that
in Washington. I hope nobody would say that.
I heard people say that in Washington. I heard somebody say, like, I can't believe, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, well, she was asking for it. These are professional people. These are people with a lot of power. So I think if you're around people that say that, and also you know that the person's been has been under some type of veil of immunity from a variety of things, you're going to really, like, think about that. But having evidence can make a big difference. And I think that's one thing, is that, you know, I know someone who was falsely accused of sexual harassment, and I saw what occurred with that, and there was no evidence to it. And so when it comes down to the legal situations, especially as much as reputations are in order, I'm always going to err on the side of saying, okay, what kind of things do you know that you can bring to the table in terms of evidence? Are there other women? I mean, one thing that I would really love for the Time's Up movement to do is for there to be, and I wish we could do it in Washington. I mean, there's certain companies that have set up ethics officers, ethical officers or ethics officers who sort of live outside of the company and live outside of the board of directors, if there's a board of directors. But we need more independent groups that, you know, actors, actresses, people in Washington, people in other industries can go to who are independent, who actually can do some investigation on this, who actually will encourage things like evidence. Because there is a legal issue here. People are, you know, like going through that track, and that's a track that a lot of us don't see because, of course, it's in the legal environment, and we're not going to know all the things that go on. And, you know, certainly with the settlements, like, people weren't knowing that those were going on because people signed, you know, basically over that they weren't going to say anything, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, that's one thing that I feel is, as a woman, is really important. It's like to marry and to talk also about how do we as women become smart advocates, not just for our own sort of personal power and our professionalism, but how do we handle these sort of situations from a legal perspective? Because it's really important for us to know, A, what our rights are, and B, what we need to be able to sort of demonstrate. Because, you know, I hate to say it, but the system doesn't always serve if you don't have the right things to give to the system. And that's a sad sort of commentary, but unfortunately, that's due process, and that's the way the court system sort of works. So I just want to also say that. But I understand completely what you're saying, absolutely, 100%. But I do feel like we need to have better systems in place to be able to support that and to help women. Because the other thing is, like, yes, that man continued to go and harass other women, but he also had people that knew it, and they weren't doing their job either, and they should be held accountable too. It's not always just on one person. You know what I mean? So I just want to say that as well. Although I think we're all right. That's the thing. You know, we're all right. It's just how do we, I used to build systems, like I said, after wars, after conflicts and that, you know, in war affected areas that had been decimated by things like violence riots and gang rape and, you know, rape camps, for crying out loud. And we had to think through, you know, how do you build systems in place that are going to support people's rights being protected, their very lives being protected, but how do you do it in a way that's legal and is just, so that you don't just have false accusations also being bandied about, that there are things related to a constitution, for example, or a due process, and on President's Day, and I have to give a nod to that.
Yes, you know, so like I said,
but, you know, hey, I used to work in Washington for 15 years, so, you know, I'm pretty well versed in that stuff too.
Yeah, and those are all great points. And, you know, I think it's great that we look at all angles of it, because it's certainly not a one-sided issue. There are so many different sides and points of view on it. And I think you brought up some extremely valid points about that. So on that note, are there any key takeaways that you would love for our listeners today, either about things on how to prevent sexual harassment, or if you're a male or female in a situation, personally or professionally, to handle it, aside from a couple of the ones, which I love, of, you know, diffusing it with humor, or perhaps inviting others to join you in those circumstances, that we haven't already covered, that you'd love to leave the listeners with?
Well, I think, you know, the other couple would be just make sure that you're not putting yourself in a vulnerable situation. I mean, like I said, I would have put myself in a vulnerable situation if I'd gone to that guy's villa. It's so funny to me that sometimes, you know, we have people, especially people in power, and we're, you know, maybe we're new to a job or whatever, that they will go and say, like, come, you know, like, have a meeting in my hotel room. I mean, you know, I remember being overseas, and, you know, we didn't have a lot of money because we were an NGO. And so, like, having a meeting in somebody's hotel room to talk to Washington was kind of commonplace, and it was really awkward. And then I went and ended up being with this phenomenal former diplomat who propped the door open one day when I was in his room, because he wanted to preserve my reputation and he wanted to make sure that I was comfortable. And I just thought, that's the best freaking thing ever. I just thought, that's so great. And then I was like, but why couldn't we get a conference room? So I asked, I'm like, well, couldn't we get a conference room when we have to, like, call you? Like, couldn't we run a conference room for, like, a half day? My boss was like, sure. I was like, yeah. Like, why not? Like, I was like, we really shouldn't put ourselves in these situations. He's like, you're absolutely right. I didn't really realize that people were, because he never, like, had meetings with people in his room. And I was like, well, yeah, there's some of us who are, like, having these senior manager guys being like, well, we should call Washington from my room. And I'm like, I don't really want to go to your room. That's really awkward, you know? And then, like I said, to think, like, prop the door open, right? Hello.
Yeah.
Go and ask if you can have a conference room for a little bit. I mean, like, little things that you don't think about, but they're important. And I think the other thing is that, and I'm going to speak to the men, because I had a really great, I think I mentioned this when you and I had talked last week. My chief financial officer and I had this really great conversation when this came out, and he was really struggling. He works not just as my chief financial officer, because, you know, like, he's not yet full time with me.
Yeah.
So he has a day job as well. But he was like, you know, I hate this because I'm a guy and I want women to feel like they have more guys out there supporting them. I want to do stuff. And he's like, and I feel like there are things for us to do. And he's like, you've had some really great bosses. He's like, you know, maybe you're, like, in a position to share some things. And so I what I want to say to all the men is, like, also, you're likely going to be in situations where men start having off-color comments about women. They might have off-color comments about the women in the office, but it might be ones that they were, like, with that weekend that are, it's a little inappropriate to do it around the water cooler, shall we say. Or guys are looking at girls' asses as they're walking out of the conference room. Like, don't be that guy. Be a little bit more aware. I just was with a friend of mine, and I was astonished at, like, how many men stared at her boobs as we were walking down the street. I just could not get over it. One even waved and pointed at her boobs, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? I was like, where did you come from, and who raised you? Because, like, this is so not appropriate. But I think the other thing was, I saw this great great scene in The Tourist, which has Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp. It's a really charming movie, but there was this great scene in which they were surveilling Angelina Jolie, you know, who's a beautiful woman, and they were zeroing in the camera on her butt as she was walking. And the head of the assignment came in, and he was like, guys, let's keep it professional. Be that guy.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, is be somebody who, you know, uphold your own moral standards, men or women. You know, it's, what was that horrible, or not movie, the movie was called Horrible Bosses with Jennifer Aniston. Did you ever see that one?
No, I didn't see it. I lived it.
Sexual predator in the movie, which is kind of funny because it's like this dentist woman who is being a predator towards one of her clients. And so it can go either way, you know, just be responsible and have integrity for, you know, treat other people the way you would want to be treated, and don't put yourself in a position, or if you see somebody else putting someone else in an awkward position, call them out on it. Just don't participate in it. And I think those are all wonderful pieces of advice. So I don't know about everybody listening out there, but your books sound amazing. So please tell everybody where they can find your books and, you know, what book you would recommend starting with out of the 40.
Sure. No, I mean, I would start, I think with the particular topic for today, I would start with Goddesses Deserve the G's, because, you know, it's about getting the job. It's about feeling like you can be successful doing what you love, which, you know, is one thing that not everybody believes, actually, interestingly enough. And you can go on Amazon, you can type in Ava Miles and I'll pop right up, or iBooks or Nook, but you can also go on my website at avamiles.com.
Awesome, Ava. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciated your positive resistance and feedback on some of the stuff that I was saying as well. So it's always great to engage in a dialogue such as that. And next week, thank you again for all of that. And next week, I invite everybody to tune in at 4 p.m. on Monday as we interview Marion McGovern, author of Thriving in the Gig Economy. So we're going to be spending a little bit of time on that next week. And of course, if you ever miss any portion of the show, immediately following the show, you can find a link for it on the download of the archive section on LA Talk Radio. Specifically, go to Get Yourself the Job. And later in the week, the show is available on iTunes, and you can find it in podcast format on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job, and also interact with us on Facebook on our Get Yourself the Job Facebook page link. Thank you so much. Thank you again for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show, Ava, and wishing everybody a wonderful evening and a very happy rest of your President's Day.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.